Welcome to the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast. I am Lindsay Lockett, your host. The episodes of this podcast weave together a web of healing. The conversations shared here are created with love and the belief that awareness, curiosity, authenticity, and vulnerability are our most necessary and powerful healing tools, and they are already within each one of us. The spider's web has served as a great teacher for me. Webs are designed in such a way that the tiniest vibration in one part of the web ripples out and vibrates the entire web. Through this intricate network, every thread is connected. Nothing happens to one that doesn't somehow affect the others. Each human is a strand in the collective web, and inside of you exists the threads of body, mind, spirit, emotion, ancestry, and community that make up your web of life. It is not unlike the web of neurons in our brains or the web of the nervous system that connects each system and part of our bodies together. Everything is connected. I hope this podcast helps you get to the root of how trauma has affected every part of your existence and helps you weave a new web of life that isn't ruled by the past. Hello, friends and podcast listeners. Welcome to episode 103 of the podcast. I have been hesitating and procrastinating this episode for weeks, and I do not think that it is a mistake or an accident or a coincidence that the day I'm finally surrendering to recording and putting out this episode happens to be my late grandmother's 93rd birthday. So my Meemaw, as I called her, because that's a very Southern grandmother name, my Meemaw, her name was Edith Dell Parker, and she was born in 1930 in Brownwood, Texas. She was the youngest of six children, and she grew up in a poor farming family in Central Texas. My grandmother had a hard life. She was married three times. Two of her husbands were very abusive to her and to her children. She had three children with two husbands. But she was so strong, and she powered through, and she continues to be one of the ancestors and guides that I feel the most close and connected to this day, even though she's been gone for 13 years. I always work with a photo of her on my desk or near me because I truly do feel that she is one of my ancestors who continues to guide and bless and support my work, both personally and professionally. And it's interesting that today would be her 93rd birthday because today is also around the time, not the exact anniversary, but marking the approximate anniversary of a year of not speaking to my mother. Ooh, I feel emotional just saying that out loud. I've had the thought in my head, a year of not speaking to my mother, but saying it out loud just makes it feel more real or gives it more weight or something. I'm not sure. So what I want to share in this episode is what this last year of being no contact with my mother has been like. I want to preface every single thing that I'm saying with a very, very clear statement that in no way is this episode an attempt to shame or judge my mother. I don't want you to shame or feel judgment towards my mother. I love my mother. I honor my mother. And this episode is not an attempt at dishonoring my mother. And at the same time, I know that many of my listeners, people who have complex PTSD, have either considered or have gone no contact with a parent. And going no contact with my mother is not something that I ever planned on doing. It's never occurred to me to cut my mother out of my life. I still have not cut my mother out of my life. The reason that we are no contact, in my opinion, has more to do with her choice than mine, although she may have a different perspective on that. I certainly honor that she has her own perspective. Still, my mother has been a very important and very prominent figure in my life for my entire life. And there have been seasons in my adulthood where I have wanted her to move in with us, or I have wanted her to move closer to us because we live 1,200 miles away from her. There have been seasons, especially during COVID, where I didn't see my mother for over 2 years, and that was really hard and devastating for me. And yet, here I am, a year without contact with my mother. So I want you to please hold the nuance that what you are hearing is only my side of the story. This is only my perspective. My mother also has a perspective, and her perspective and story are just as valid and important as mine are. And I hope that we aren't no contact forever. I certainly hope that we can find some common ground to reconnect on, because I know that we both love each other. And yet, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. So a year ago, my mother was going to have a really major back surgery. And she asked me to come down to Texas from Minnesota, where I live. She asked me to come down and to take care of her as she recuperated after her back surgery. It was a really major surgery. Her scar on her spine is like 6-7 inches long. She had staples all the way down her spine. She had a cyst on her spine that was removed. She had a bunch of scar tissue that had to be cut out from a previous back surgery. So this was her second major back surgery. And by the time my mother had surgery, even though she was only 64 at the time of the surgery, she had gotten to the point where she couldn't even walk around the grocery store without nearly falling or her legs feeling like they were going to collapse underneath her or being in really severe pain. And she had tried cortisone shots and physical therapy and foam rolling and stretching and chiropractic and massage and all the things. And it just got to the point where surgery seemed to be her only option. And so she asked me to come down last September. I flew down to Texas on September 12th. It was the day after she had surgery. And I was prepared to just jump in with both feet and take care of her, to cook for her, to clean for her, to help her shower and use the bathroom, to make sure her hair was brushed and that she had her medication and all the things. I was prepared for all of it. I know how to be a caretaker. And I didn't mind at all. I knew that my mom didn't really have any other options. I do have a younger brother who lives near my mom, and he was also part of that process. So my brother and I were taking care of my mom together. And I guess I should also share that my personal history with my mother is that she has a history of prescription drug addiction. She's been to drug rehab twice for that addiction, for painkillers like OxyContin and Vicodin, but also Xanax and things like that. And she and my stepfather divorced partly because of that addiction. There was definitely shit happening for my stepfather as well that was unacceptable. It wasn't just my mom's fault. And so she's also been sober for like 17 years at this point. So she doesn't have an active drug problem anymore. But we all knew that she was going to be prescribed the same painkillers that she was once addicted to. And that was something that she was concerned about going into the surgery. And so my brother and I made a plan, and we're just like, you know, mom, like, we will be in charge of your medication. We'll make sure you get it when you need it. We will keep it out of your reach. Like, you won't be able to access it. We'll just give it to you on a schedule. She was fine with that plan, because she really was worried, and she had every reason to be worried. Like, when you've dealt with an addiction and then you need the very thing that you used to have such a problem with, like, that's a scary place to be in. So I totally, like, empathized and understood her concerns and my concerns as well, I'll be honest. So my brother and I even went so far as to not only give her the medication that she was supposed to have on the dosing schedule that she was supposed to have it and keep it hidden in a place in the house where she wasn't going to be able to find it, not that she could walk around and find stuff anyway, but we also made a plan for how to gently start tapering her off of that medication so that she wasn't just taking it every day for 10 days and then boom, stop, right? Because we all know that taking pills and then stopping them cold turkey can cause its own set of problems and issues. So we were very thoughtful and intentional about it. And I also knew going into this process that my mom was coming off of general anesthesia, and sometimes people can be emotionally chaotic, reactive, crying, angry, feel lost, hopeless, anxious, all of these things after they receive general anesthesia and come out of general anesthesia. So I was fully prepared for, you know, the fact that she might be loopy or needy or emotional or angry or whatever. And so after the surgery, she got home and we started trying to settle into the routine of making sure she was cared for. And for the first several days, she just slept a lot, which I expected. And so I used that time to try to do some cleaning around her house and prepare like some chicken noodle soup for her and freeze some and then have some. And people were also bringing food over. And so I was warming up food for her and taking it to her in bed. And she was also supposed to get up and try to walk around. And so I was helping her with that and, you know, all the things that a caretaker does. And even more of my history with my mother, so I apologize if this seems all over the place, but I feel like the context is necessary. So I've said on multiple episodes of this podcast that the relationship with my mother from the time I was young was one of abandonment. And I say that with no judgment towards my mother whatsoever, and I hope that you won't judge her either. I can fully acknowledge that she was doing the best she could with what she had. And she was parenting in the 80s and 90s when gentle parenting and conscious parenting and co-regulation and nervous system language and trauma language and all of that was not on anyone's radar at that point. Or if it was on your radar, you were in like the margins of society, right? So I fully acknowledge all of that. And also, the way that I was mothered was not anywhere near good enough. The way that I was mothered created the core wound of my life, which was abandonment. When I was 3 years old, my mother and my uncle were riding around in a truck, and my mother was driving. And I'm not sure what I was doing. I don't know if I was throwing a fit or if I was just crying or upset, or I don't know what I was doing. But she pulled the truck over and took me out of the truck and put me on the side of the road and drove off and left me there. I have no idea how long I was there. I have no idea if it was a busy highway or a quiet neighborhood street. I have no idea if she came back in seconds or if it was minutes. I have no idea. I was three. But I know that this probably created one of the first major traumas of my life, being literally physically abandoned by my mother on the side of the road for being a child, right? Just for throwing a fit and having big feelings. And although she never physically abandoned me ever again after that, she emotionally abandoned me over and over and over again. And when I say emotional abandonment, I'm referring to what Pete Walker talks about in his book, Complex PTSD, where the parent is like physically present, but emotionally they're either checked out or they're dissociated themselves, or they punish you for your own very normal childhood emotions, or they're not able to co-regulate with you or something. So that's the emotional abandonment that I'm referring to. It's her not being the source of emotional stability and attunement that I needed, even though her physical presence was there and my physical needs for food and clothing and schooling and all of that were met. My needs for unconditional love and unconditional acceptance and my authenticity were what weren't met. And so that is what I mean when I say emotional abandonment. So my stepfather was the more physically abusive parent that I had. I didn't have a relationship with my biological father after the age of 8. So my stepfather was the source of the majority of the physical abuse that I experienced. My mother also physically abused me, but not with nearly the frequency that my stepfather did. However, it was always obvious to me that my stepfather's physical abuse was wrong and unfair, and I always knew that I didn't deserve it. I would often even threaten him that I would expose him. I threatened to call CPS. I threatened to tell a youth pastor, to which he would just laugh in my face. But the emotional abandonment that I endured from my mother is actually the cause of my complex PTSD. Because it wasn't obviously wrong and unfair the way the physical abuse was. And it took me decades to understand that I was not the cause of her emotional abandonment. So in the episode with Michelle Robertson, where we talk about the mother wound, I'll link to that in the show notes below, I tell the story about how my mother would often give me the silent treatment and would be passive aggressive towards me. I would get off the school bus in the afternoon after school, and I would walk in and her back would be turned because of the way our kitchen was laid out. And all I wanted was what every kid wants when they walk home in the door after school. They just want their mother to turn around and open her arms and say, "You're home. I'm so happy to see you. How was your day? Tell me everything. What did you do? What did you learn? What do you want to show me? What happened? How was your lunch?" Like, that was what I wanted. But I feel like more often than not, what I got was this very shut down, frozen, dissociated woman who would keep her back turned to me. And my spidey senses intuition for my whole life have been very, very strong, including when I was a child. And so I could sense in the energy, in her energy, that there was something wrong, but I didn't know what it was. And because she wouldn't look at me and she wouldn't acknowledge me or speak to me, the internal belief that formed for me is I must have done something wrong. I must be the cause of her behavior. I must be the reason why she won't speak to me. And so that would start this very anxious, hypervigilant sort of pressing in where, like Russ Kennedy in his book, The Anxiety Rx, he talks about how a child's fight flight response is not to fight against the parent or run away from the parent, that response in children is to pursue the parent. So much energy goes into pursuing the parent. And that's exactly what I did. In the anxiety and in the hypervigilance that I was feeling, I was pursuing my mother. And the body language is this sort of leaning in where I'm like, is everything okay? Did I do something wrong? What can I do to help this? How can I make this better? Like, that was the way I would speak to my mother. And then the answers that I would receive in return were these very short, flat, one-worded answers. So for example, "Mom, is everything okay?" And she would just be like, "It's fine." "Have I done something wrong?" "No." Wouldn't look at me, wouldn't acknowledge me, wouldn't connect with me, wouldn't attune to me, wouldn't just, even if she had been having a hard day, like say her and my stepfather had a fight, that happened all the fucking time. Like even if that had happened or they were struggling financially, which also happened a lot, like she wouldn't just say, "Yes, honey, everything is okay. You're okay. I've had a hard day and your dad and I had a fight earlier, or we're having trouble with this bill or whatever, but everything between you and me is fine. I love you. Tell me about your day." Like she didn't have the awareness to do that. And so the story that got created in my little body and in my mind was that I am the cause of this. She has withdrawn her love, her attention, her affection from me because I have done something bad or wrong. And then I would use my fight flight energy to, instead of pursuing her to try to figure out what I had done wrong, I would then start doing things around the house in an attempt to earn her affection, her attention, her attunement back. So I would clean, I would rearrange the decorations on our mantle and hope that that would be pleasing to her. I would show a report card and it had straight A's and hope that that would be what was pleasing. I would do anything it took to please her, to try to get back in her good graces. This is emotional abandonment. This is the cause of my complex PTSD. And so to this day, whenever I am in an intimate relationship with someone, whether it's my husband, my best friend, other close friends that I have, my brother, if there is some sort of separation, or if I think I'm energetically picking up on some sort of emotional separation, those behaviors start all over again. I feel hypervigilant. I feel anxious. I wonder, have I done something wrong that's caused them to pull away from me? And then I'll even replay in my mind the last conversation we had, or I'll go back through and read the text messages that we've exchanged to try to see, oh, did I say something? Have I done something? And that's exactly what I did with my mother. So hypervigilance and anxiety turns into second guessing and searching for what have I done wrong to cause this? There is a rupture here and it feels unbearable and uncomfortable and I need to figure it out so that I can fix it so that we can be connected again. This is the cause of my complex PTSD. And so I have done so much work around this. I don't hold unforgiveness or contempt or scorn or hate towards my mother. I know that I know that I know that she was doing the absolute best that she could, and she was under-resourced and under-supported, and my stepfather was a narcissist, and our whole house walked around on eggshells because his temper was so big that he would be violent when he got pissed off. I get it. I don't know that she could have done it any differently because she didn't have the awareness, the resources, the support, the understanding, the education, the vocabulary to do it differently. And also, I am 40 fucking years old. And if my husband has a quiet afternoon and seems withdrawn from me, it freaks me the fuck out. And all of those feelings of, what have I done? Why are you upset? Why have you withdrawn from me? What can I do to make this better? Replaying our last conversation or replaying the day in my head again and again, trying to figure out, what did I do? When odds are, I probably didn't do anything. He's just having an off day, which he's allowed to have. Just like my mother was allowed to have off days. But instead of being able to attune to me and explain to me, yeah, mommy's having big feelings. Mommy's having a hard day. Mommy needs some space. She didn't have that ability. And so I just learned to assume I've done something wrong. It was actually pretty quick and easy for me to heal from the PTSD of my stepfather's physical abuse and even my mother's physical abuse. EMDR was really helpful for this. I also had one psychedelic-induced session of imagined reprocessing. So I don't feel like I still carry, like I'm not still easily startled and jumpy when somebody raises their hand or something because I'm afraid I'm going to get hit. That is not part of my reality anymore. Like I do feel that I am completely recovered from that. But the emotional abandonment that I'm describing, that is an ongoing process. That is something that I am still recovering from, that I'm still being triggered by, that I'm not sure if I'm ever going to fully, air quotes, get over it. I was 37 before I understood why emotional abandonment was such a trigger for me. And I have not found the modality that soothes and heals this abandonment. Of course, I'm not saying that there aren't modalities out there, but I don't believe that there is a modality that heals all of this. I think it has to be a combination of modalities because of the way that it affects us, not only at the energetic level, but the emotional level, the spiritual level, and the physical level, right? But I have discovered that feeling my way through these triggers helps me to recover more quickly. And also, I've developed language. So now I have the ability, for example, if my husband seems withdrawn or overly quiet, and I pick up on that, I now have language to say, hey, I'm noticing that you seem more withdrawn and really quiet. And what that's bringing up for me is, I think you might be upset with me, or you're mad at me, or I've done something wrong. Is that what's actually happening? So we've developed the safety in that way, so that it doesn't mean I don't get triggered, but it means that I don't have to get lost in the trigger or in the emotional flashback, as Pete Walker calls it. Also, whenever I feel my way through these triggers, I can access anger and grief, which I still feel towards my situation for how I grew up. I still, not towards my mother necessarily, but just I feel angry still that that's how I grew up. I feel grief still that that's how I grew up, because I know I deserved and needed better. And so in my very favorite trauma recovery book, Complex PTSD, I talk about this book more than I talk about any other book in all of my work. I will definitely link it below in the show notes. If you don't have this book already, please, please, please get it. If you don't buy another trauma healing book, buy this one. The author Pete Walker writes, "Children so need to believe that their parents love and care for them that they will deny and minimize away evidence of the most egregious neglect and abuse. De-minimization is a crucial aspect of confronting denial. It is the process by which a person deconstructs the defense of making light of his childhood trauma. The lifelong process of de-minimizing the impact of childhood trauma is like peeling a very slippery and caustic onion. The outer layer for some is the stark physical evidence of abuse, for example, sexual abuse or excessive corporal punishment. Subsequent layers involve verbal, spiritual, and emotional abuse. Core layers have to do with verbal, spiritual, and emotional neglect. For many, verbal and emotional abuse damaged us more than our physical abuse. Minimization about the damage caused by extensive emotional neglect is at the core of the CPTSD denial onion. Our journey of recovering takes a quantum leap when we really feel and understand how devastating it was to be emotionally abandoned. An absence of parental loving interest and engagement, especially in the first few years, creates an overwhelming emptiness. Much of the constant anxiety that adult survivors live in is this still aching fear that comes from having been so frighteningly abandoned. Many survivors never discover and work through the wounds that correlate with this level of abandonment. This is especially likely to occur with survivors who dismissively compare their trauma to those who were abused more noticeably and more dramatically. Growing up emotionally neglected is like nearly dying of thirst outside a fenced-off fountain of a parent's warmth and interest. Emotional neglect makes children feel worthless, unlovable, and excruciatingly empty." And that's how I felt. That is how I feel every time my abandonment wound gets triggered. Every time. And so to go back to being with my mother after her back surgery, she started displaying some of her passive-aggressive behaviors. And I tried to hold it in my awareness that she's come off of general anesthesia, have grace. She's on painkillers, have grace. She's in so much pain, have grace. She can't do anything for herself, have grace. I just kept telling myself that over and over and over again. But at a certain point, whether it was because of anesthesia or pain or medication or what, her behavior became too overwhelming for me. The trigger was so strong, and I felt so much anxiety and fear, but also anger. And I had to remind myself, Lindsay, you're an adult now. You don't have to go back into this people-pleasing, seeking, pursuing mode that you were so accustomed to being in with her. You can be an adult and speak up. You can assert yourself. You can have boundaries. And I did that. And there were moments when I did it well. And I feel really good about the way I did it. And I did it because I have tools and language and communication skills that I have never had before. But I also have to admit that there were moments when I completely fucked it up. And I lashed out at her. And I probably made her feel a lot of shame. And so she stopped talking to me. I flew home at the beginning of October of 2022. And every day for about 10 days, I would either call or text to check on her. Hey, how are you doing? Have you gotten your physical therapy appointment set up yet? How's it going? How are you feeling? All of that. And I was getting those one-word answers. And I could feel the energy through the tone of the text message and also in her voice when I would call her. She did not want to talk to me. And so after about 10 days, after being home from seeing her, I could sense very palpably she doesn't want to talk to me. Every time I talk to her, it feels really uncomfortable. I'm going to give her some space. And it's been a year. And I'm still giving her space. We didn't speak at all. No texting, no emailing, nothing. From October of 2022 to April of 2023. And at the end of April of this year, I received an email. And I applaud her for the attempt at writing this email, but I could still tell that she was very closed off and not at all open to my perspective because she said that I had treated her like an addict. And I didn't know exactly what that meant. I mean, how does one treat someone like an addict? What does that mean? I didn't know. But I could tell that there was a lot of pain in her email, that she wanted an apology, that she felt justified in her separation and in her anger and in her going no contact with me. And so my response to her email was just, I really want to hear you and I want to hear your pain and I have things I need to say too. Would it be possible for us to come together and have a mutually beneficial conversation? Are you open to that? And her response back was, I am. But that was it. And the very confusing thing for me was, here she was saying, yeah, I'm open to this. But then it felt like the responsibility fell on me to set that up, to schedule it, to try to find a time to figure out if we were going to resolve it through email or if we were going to have a phone call or a FaceTime or like what. And I literally didn't know what to do. I didn't know, okay, do I try to set something up? Is that my responsibility? Like, is it her responsibility because she's the one who initiated? Like, this is the complexity of relationships that I don't know that there are clear, concise answers for, to be completely honest. And so I just left it thinking, okay, if this is what she wants, if this is important to her, then I trust that she'll get back to me. Another month went by. My birthday was on May 28th, and she sent me a text on my birthday. Hey, happy 40th. I hope you have a fantastic day. I love you. And I felt so hopeful. I was like, oh my gosh, she's reached out again. Okay, maybe something can actually happen now. And so I texted her back. Thank you. I love you too. I'd love to talk to you. Can I talk to you later today? And she just responded, well, I have a lot going on. I'll let you know. And she never let me know. Another month and a half went by, and on July 15th, it was her birthday. So I texted her, hey, mom, I hope you have a great birthday. I love you. She texted back, thank you. I love you too. And that was it. And here we are, a year after I actually have had a face-to-face or phone conversation with my mother. It's October 1st. It's 1:55 on my time right now, which is one of my very special numbers. So I feel really supported in this moment. It's my grandmother's birthday. My grandmother was my mother's mother. So this also feels like there's some ancestral stuff happening. I know that my grandmother would be really sad if she was alive and she knew that this was how things were between my mother and me. And I'm saying all of this to say that I don't have the answers for any of this. This is the part of relational healing that I truly do feel at a loss about. But one thing was very clear to me over this past year, and that was that it was a pattern in my relationship with my mother from childhood to go in pursuit of her, to pursue her by leaning in and saying, "What's wrong? Is everything okay? Have I done something? Are you mad at me?" And it was really, really clear to me that I needed to break that pattern within myself. And for the first few months, I'll admit it was really hard. Everything in me wanted to pick up the phone and call and try to force a conversation. Everything in me wanted to text her and try to get something, some sort of breadcrumb, some sort of clue that she was still there, that she still cared, that she still wanted to be my mom, that she still wanted to be in my life. But I knew that cannot be the reason I pursue her, because that just reinforces this pattern and it reinforces the codependency where I need her to be okay so that I can be okay. And so this year has been dealing with this abandonment wound at the deepest level of trauma that I ever knew was possible. And learning how to be okay without my mother in my life. And it's not because I just woke up one day and was like, you know what? I have to go no contact with my mother. I'm cutting her out of my life. That was not and has never been my intention and is still not my intention. But I, for the first time in my relationship with my mom, I have prioritized myself. And I have allowed that inner child part of me. She's a black sheep. I've done a lot of parts work with her. She's a black sheep. And all she wants to do is be alone in a pasture. And she wants to kick and scream and buck because she's so angry because the way that her mom spoke to her or didn't speak to her and the energy and the emotional abandonment and all of it felt like one of those chutes that they put animals in. If you're familiar with livestock at all, there are things called chutes, and they're like very tiny cages that have an opening at one end and an opening at another end, and an animal is kind of funneled into the chute. And once they're in the chute, both ends are closed so that they're then locked in, and it's very cramped and tight, and they put animals in chutes for a variety of reasons, usually to like doctor them or give them a vaccine or deworm them or to keep them away from other animals or something like that. And the energy that I feel with my mother is like I'm in this chute. And all I want to do is kick and buck and scream and get out of the chute and go back out to the pasture. And I would rather be alone without her than be cramped in this chute of passive aggressiveness and silent treatment and pursuing, trying to fix it and please her so that I can earn her love back. That may not make sense to anybody but me. That's okay. It doesn't have to make sense to anybody but me. So anyway, I've done so much work with this little part, and it wasn't up to my mother to soothe this little part. It's up to me. It's up to me to now create relationships that are safe where I don't have to do that and be in that pattern of pursuit of trying to make everything okay, of earning my way back, of earning love and attention and affection back. And so for a year, I have wrestled with anxiety in my relationships. I have had so many hard conversations with my husband and with my best friend. I have grieved over the fact that an entire year of my life has gone by, and my mother, who is one of the most important people in my life, isn't here. And there's a part of me that
wishes that she was dead, because that is easier to accept than the fact that she has willfully withdrawn herself from me again. And also, I know that she has a side. I know that I do owe her an apology. I know that there is repair that needs to happen. But it needs to happen on both sides. And I, at this point, would rather go the rest of my life not speaking to my mother than to try to have a conversation with her now where I say, here's what you did, and here's how it hurt, and here's how you weren't enough, and here's how that affects me now. Because when I've tried doing that in the past, her response is always something like, well, I'm sorry, I wasn't a good enough mother for you. Or, well, you had it better than I did. Or something like that. And I would be more heartbroken to receive that kind of response than I am from just continuing in this radio silence. And this is so complex because I could pick up the phone and call. I could email her back. I could text. I could. And I feel frozen about it. Because on the one hand, it's like, well, I could risk it. I could risk this. I could reach out and maybe it'll be different this time. But then there's the other part of me that's like, I don't know that it actually will be different this time. I don't trust that it'll be different this time. And I would rather live with this isolation and withdrawal from her than have another interaction with her where she is the victim. And I know that she feels like the victim of how I spoke to her, because as I said, I was able to clearly and calmly assert myself at times and set boundaries. And then there were other moments where I was really triggered and dysregulated, and she was not dealing with adult self Lindsay. She was dealing with 7-8-year-old Lindsay, who is triggered as fuck, but has also figured out that she has anger and a fight response. And I wasn't doing a very good job of channeling my anger and my fight response. And I know I hurt her in return. So repair needs to happen on both sides. I owe her apologies, but I also want to hear an apology from her. And I don't know that I ever will. And can that be okay? Can it be okay? And today, I think it is okay. And also, it's my grandmother's 93rd birthday, and my mother is my grandmother's daughter. And I do feel like somewhere in the ethers, my grandmother is trying to support reconciliation and repair between her own daughter and her own granddaughter. And I don't have answers for that. All I can do is, when I feel the abandonment come up again, and it does, and it's come up again and again and again over the last year, and I have learned to finally feel it. I have learned to pause in the trigger and feel it, to feel the anxiety, the urge and the compulsion to pursue, to try to fix it, to try to please. I do this with my husband. I do it with my best friend. These are the two relationships I get the most triggered in at this time, because these are the ones that I have connection and attachment to now. These are the ones that it would devastate me the most to lose. And I have to remind myself very frequently, they are not the cause of this trigger. They are simply the mirror. This is something that is unhealed within me, and I don't know if it's realistic to ever try to have the goal of one day this will be 100% resolved and I will not be affected by this anymore. And I'm so sick and tired of the collective's definition of healed being it's completely and totally gone. It's resolved. It doesn't hurt anymore. It's not painful anymore. It's over. It's fixed. It's done. That is our collective assumption of what healing is. And I'm sorry if this disappoints anyone listening, but it's bullshit. It's bullshit to say that healed equals it's gone and it will never hurt you again and you will never experience this again. It's totally resolved. It's done. It's over. That's what we all want though, isn't it? It's what I want. I don't want to feel this fucking abandonment trigger ever again. It sucks. When I get in it, I get lost in it. And sometimes I can't come out for days or weeks. But my intimate relationships now are not the source of that trigger. And I have to be in awareness of that and not react all over them just because they held a mirror up and the button got pushed, right? The wound got poked and it hurts because it's not fully healed yet. It's not gone. It's not over. It may be a scar, and scar tissue is hard and it's not very pliable. It's not very flexible. And depending on the size of the scar tissue or the location of the scar tissue in the physical body, if you have a physical scar, sometimes your body has to adapt around that, right? Sometimes it impedes movement, nerves, feeling. Sometimes it causes more pain because of the scar tissue. And there's work that you can do with scars, but once you have a scar, the body is physically permanently altered. It will never go back to being the body that it was before the scar existed. And that's how I've come to see this emotional abandonment pattern in my life is, what if it's a scar? What if I have done everything that I can do for this, but I'm still trying to adapt around it because it affects my life in very real ways? And what if that can be okay? Because I'm not in unsafe relationships anymore, the way that I was in an unsafe relationship with my mother when I was, you know, 3 and got left on the side of the road, and 7 and 8, and she wouldn't speak to me when I got home from school, and 10 when none of my twirling or my grades or anything was ever good enough. Like, I'm not in that relationship anymore. I am not that child anymore. I have co-created safe, emotionally safe, reciprocal, conscious relationships where if that abandonment wound gets poked, it's not because my husband or my best friend are actually abandoning me in that moment. It's because it's bringing up this shit from my past with my mom. So even though the wound still gets poked, I am showing up as a different person because I am in relationships with safer people. And because I have not found the modality, I haven't figured out the breath work or the somatic experiencing or the tapping exercise or the nervous system tool or whatever, I haven't found the modality that is totally going to get rid of and fix and resolve this potential scar that I have. So what other choice do I have except to accept, hey, maybe this is a scar. Maybe I don't like accepting that it's a scar because there was a part of me that believes that healed means it's truly resolved and gone. But what if it could be okay that that wound gets poked and it hurts, but it happens in the context of safe relationships instead of relationships that are actually abandoning me? And I've created those relationships. I can say with certainty, I have those relationships. I have several of those relationships, and none of them are with people that I am related to by blood. They are all with people who I have considered and created family with, although we are not blood family. And in these instances, the water is thicker than the blood. The progress that I've made over this last year is that I can feel when this abandonment wound gets poked without as much fear anymore. I'm not second guessing my relationships anymore. I don't wonder if my husband is going to leave me when the abandonment wound gets poked. I don't have thoughts of leaving him when the abandonment wound gets poked. I don't think that my friendships are ending when the abandonment wound gets poked, and that's progress. The fact that I don't immediately jump to the catastrophe of being abandoned actually is progress. doesn't mean the trigger isn't still happening. It is. But I can feel my way through it now, and I can get through the trigger faster. I have more language to describe what I'm experiencing. I have the ability to acknowledge how my experiences affect people that I love in very real ways, and I can communicate that with them and also take responsibility for myself. I can ask for what I need now. I've made a lot of progress, but it's not totally fixed or gone. And if that's what we think healed has to mean, we are going to come up sorely disappointed over and over and over, because I think it's totally unrealistic. And I'm a fucking healer for a living, and I'm saying this. I recognize that it's terrible marketing, but it's honest. It's honest. All I know how to do now is notice, become aware, and be curious when the abandonment wound gets poked. Remind myself that I'm not that child anymore, that this person that I'm in relationship with is not my mother. That's not what's happening. Feel the anxiety, the hypervigilance, the catastrophization, the urge and compulsion to pursue, and use my words to communicate and continue creating safe, reciprocal relationships. That's all I know to do now. I don't have to be on a trauma healing hamster wheel forever trying to chase this one problem when actually it's not as big of a problem anymore, because the reality is that I'm not being abandoned anymore. I was abandoned in reality before, but that's not what's happening now. So feeling it without fear is the only thing I know how to do. And using my words and communicating, grieving and angering, because I still grieve and I'm still angry that this was the lot I was dealt in life. It's not fair that any person on this planet has complex PTSD because of an emotionally unavailable parent. That's not fucking fair. But if I don't take responsibility for how that's affecting my life now, then I'm going to continue to walk through life being constantly triggered and never creating deep, intimate relationships, because the abandonment or fear of abandonment is too much. And that doesn't sound like a way I want to exist at all. Fuck no. Fuck that. I want the intimacy. I want the attunement. I want the emotional availability. I want the communication. I want the rupture because I want the repair. I want all of these experiences because they prove to that inner black sheep part of mine that what was happening then is not what is happening now. And I don't have to keep chasing this relationship with my mother, because she may never have the capacity to have the kind of relationship that I want and need to have with her. And I can accept that, and that doesn't mean she's a bad person. I still love my mom. I still honor my mom. I hope that we reconnect and repair one day. And also, I know that I will be okay even if we don't. And I have to trust that somehow she will be okay too without me. And I hope that she is. Ooh, man, it felt good to get that out. Again, I'm asking you to please hold the complexity of this and remember that this is only my side of the story. My mom has her own side, and it is valid and it deserves to be heard. And one day I hope I do get to hear my mom's side of the story. I hope that we can come to a space of mutual repair where we both take responsibility for what we've done and acknowledge how we hurt the other and how we could have done better, and choose to move forward and be more conscious in our relationship. That's ultimately what I truly want. And if that doesn't happen, I will be okay. I will be okay. Thank you for listening. This is probably the most vulnerable podcast episode I have ever shared. And believe me, I have second-guessed myself over and over about this. What if my mom listens to this? What if someone who knows my mom listens to this? What if? And I just have to trust that I have spoken truth and an integrity and risk it. That's all I can do. So thank you for listening. And if you want more information about what I was talking about with feeling it without fear and getting off the trauma healing hamster wheel, I would like to invite you to check out my group program, Feel Without Fear. This is a phrase that dropped into my awareness in December of 2021, actually, so almost 2 years ago. It actually dropped into my awareness because of some health anxiety I was experiencing, which I've also come to understand that anxiety is just anxiety. It just depends on what the anxiety chooses to hyperfixate on. And sometimes that's our health. Sometimes that's relationships. Sometimes that's social situations. Sometimes it's money. But anxiety is anxiety. And that particular afternoon in December of 2021, I was feeling some mystery pelvic symptoms. And because of my history with pelvic pain and pelvic congestion syndrome and pelvic floor dysfunction, pelvic symptoms are something that scare me or used to scare me. I was giving myself a pelvic massage and I was crying, laying on the couch, and I could feel my resistance to these pelvic symptoms. I could feel the anxiety and the no, 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 not again. I could feel that in my body, but I also deeply knew that the Google rabbit hole was not where I wanted to end up. And inside my heart, spirit, the ethers, the universe, my highest self just said, feel without fear. Feel it. Don't be afraid. And it's taken me almost 2 more years of feeling and then connecting the dots of awareness and curiosity with health anxiety, with expansion and contraction, with complex PTSD, with taking radical responsibility for myself and using my agency, conscious communication, reciprocal relationships, and seeing how I've been on a trauma healing hamster wheel to actually be able to put it all together in an understandable, digestible, practical way. And feeling without fear for me was when my journey turned a corner from just using nervous system tools to feel better and to get out of uncomfortable feelings, to actually learn how to feel my way through them instead of using tools to avoid them. So if you're at a point in your healing journey where you've learned a bunch of nervous system tools, but something still feels like it's not clicking, this program may be really a good fit for you. If you're still repeating patterns and facing the same triggers again and again and again, if you're still holding out for that imaginary ending where it's all done and fixed and resolved, if complex PTSD is running the show in your life, if you're not expanding, you're not able to hold more joy, you're not able to hold pleasure, you're not able to hold even stress, if the anxiety is constantly buzzing in your body and you're still distracting yourself or trying to power through, if you see all these fucking Instagram posts about feeling your feelings but you don't know what that even means, then Feel Without Fear may be a really good fit for you. I like to think of Feel Without Fear as the thread that stitches the jagged patchwork quilt of healing together. So the next cohort of Feel Without Fear starts in November 2023. If you join Feel Without Fear before October 15th, I will give you, as a bonus gift, a replay of my workshop Nervous System 101, and also invite you to a live Q&A on October 24th. So you get a bonus gift if you sign up. Feel Without Fear consists of 6 in-depth workshops or masterclasses. If you've ever been to one of my workshops, you know about the Lindsay Lockett workshop experience. You will not leave wanting anything. There are also 6 very deep group coaching calls where you can ask questions, learn how to practically apply what you're learning, how to practice curiosity and awareness and get support from me and the other students, and also receive homework so that you can integrate as you go. And then at the very end, in February 2024, when we close, there will be a final integration ceremony where we will witness each other and practice embodying the emotions that we learn to feel without fear. There are 2 options for going through this program. So the first option is the full live group program. So that's everything that I mentioned above. Going through it live, you get replays of all of the workshops and all of the coaching calls. This starts as low as $259 for 3 months. And the second option is to go through it with a live group, but also receive private coaching with me. So you get everything that you get in the live group, but then you also get 4 90-minute private coaching sessions. And this starts at $499 a month for 4 months. There are only 3 spots available. One of them is already taken. 3 spots remain for the private coaching option, but there's no cap on seats for the group option. You can go to my website, lindsaylockett.com/feel, to learn more about this program, to see an in-depth, detailed description of each one of the workshops, what you'll be learning. You can also read testimonials from some of the students that have gone through the first cohort of the program. And like I said, if you join before October 15th, I will give you for free the replay of my Nervous System 101 workshop and invite you to a live Q&A on October 24th at 10 a.m. Central. Thank you so much for listening to what is probably the most vulnerable thing I've ever shared on the internet. It feels really scary and tenuous to share this. But thank you. Thank you for being here and thank you for listening. And I hope to see you inside Feel Without Fear. I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. Stay in touch with me by joining my email list at lindsaylockett.com/email. And feel free to follow along on Instagram at @IAmLindsayLockett. Finally, you can check out all of my offerings, including courses, private coaching, and workshops on my website at lindsaylockett.com.